right, folks. Well, you know you're for a treat when you hear that tune, because it's time for episode 587 of the Rec Poker Podcast. This is the Chats edition. We also have a Forums edition where we just talk strategy every week here on the show. Now, I'm your host, Bluff Sturini, in the Twitterverse and in the Rec Poker. Nope, I screwed that up. I'm Bluff Sturini in the home game and at Rec Poker Jim in the hellhole that we call Twitter. But I go by Jim to my friends, Jim Reed to basically everybody else. I'm our normal regular host here on Monday nights on the Rec Poker Podcast. And you can join me for free at 7:30 Eastern every week by going to YouTube and tuning in. And you can win a prize just for showing up. It's one of the fun things that we do over here on the Rec Poker Podcast every week. Now, we're going to talk to our guest, Dan Lowry, in just a moment. I'm really excited for that. First, I have to mention that we're brought to you by Running Aces. They are the official sponsor of the Rec Poker Podcast, and you can find out more about that fantastic hotel, racetrack, and casino at runaces.com. I also want to thank our premium members, because this is a largely volunteer-based organization. Most of what we do here at Rec Poker is free, and so we really depend on the support of our sponsors and our premium members who kick in $15 a month to join our training material, study groups, take part in some social activities, all the fun stuff that we do here at Rec Poker. Like I say, sign up for a free Rec Poker account today. All it takes is an email address and a smile, but we'd love for you to give our premium membership a try. You can do it for only $5 by using the code RECPOKER at checkout. All right, now you get used to hearing my voice because they let me host the show on Mondays, but I am just one man, and it takes a group, a gang, a wizard's crew to make the magic happen around here. We're doing great, everybody. And if you want to find out about more about me or the rest of the wrecking crew, which is what we call our leadership panel here, you can go to rec.poker/crew, or you can just listen up, because you're about to meet a couple of them here tonight on the show, starting with our producing co-host, Chris Jones. Save me, Chris.
I knew we were too prepared tonight. Well, I'm Chris Jones. You can find me at 5b5 on Twitter, or 5x5 in the Poker Stars home game. And I help run our monthly deep dive training thing, where we explore one poker topic as a community.
And I'm John Somsky, also known as Poker Geek MN Everywhere. And I help to run our home games. And if you want to hear some true fail, listen to the podcast that I hosted a few weeks ago.
So, thanks, guys. So I'm very pleased to be welcoming Dan Lowry to the show here. Dan, we were joking before we went live that, we were all early, all the connections worked out, everything's going to go great. And then I just managed to sort of train wreck my way through the intro to make sure that nothing goes that smoothly here on the Rec Poker Podcast. But for God's sake, welcome to the show. It's great to get you here. I'm so glad we did.
Yeah, great to be here. Appreciate the invite. Jim, John, Chris, I'm hoping to have a good time and not derail us even further, because I'm not prepared at all for any kind of public speaking ever, or much less a podcast of this magnitude. I hope all your fans out there don't just turn it off about 4 seconds into this.
Well, if they did, they'd be missing out, because Dan, I've had the pleasure of playing with you. You're an absolute pleasure at the table and a crusher besides. But don't let me put you in a box. If our audience didn't know anything about you, if they hadn't heard the words Dan Lowry before, how do you define your own role in the poker world? Tell us a little bit about sort of what it's like to be Dan Lowry.
I guess I would start with just saying that I'm just like everyone else probably that watches this podcast. I'm a rec player. A lot of people want to classify me as a pro, but at the end of the day, I'm just a family man that runs a business in Arkansas. And I get out more and more as my kids get out of the house. There's I have 3 kids that are grown now, so I've gotten to play a lot more in the last year and a half. But I have still have a little one that's 7 at home, and he keeps us running our legs off. And really, to be honest, I just play mostly small stakes tournaments. At home, I'll play an occasional home game, pretty good, cash game, PLO8 or a hold'em game somewhere along the line. And I'm pretty much in the middle of nowhere as far as where any casino is. It's 3 hours to everywhere, just a geographical anomaly. So we basically have to travel for poker. My wife used to deal the circuit a little bit. I helped her get the job on the circuit, and then we traveled together. And then she stopped traveling several years ago, And I don't know, I just took it more serious probably. And right after Gus was born, Gus is our youngest. And, you know, so after 2016, when he was born, I started playing a lot more. I had my biggest year in 2017 and up till last year. And last year I had a pretty big year. But all in all, I feel like a lot of people know me on the mid-stakes poker tours anywhere. Mid-stakes being Run Good, first and foremost, WSOP circuit. I play some Gulf Coast poker. I like to dabble a little bit when we go to Vegas, but that's very few and far between for trips out there. But we're planning a good one this summer.
Nice. Well, I'll just remind our YouTube chatters, feel free if you've got any questions for Dan to type them in to the chat there. We'll make sure that we answer them. And also stick around if you're in the YouTube chat, because at the end of the show, we'll be raffling off a prize like we do every week to support a local food bank. And all you have to do is just type the words food bank into the YouTube chat a little later on. So stick around for that. All right. So, Dan, so let's talk a little bit about that. You and I met playing at the Baltimore stop of a Run Goods tour last year. And you were an ambassador there. How does that work? They just get so used to seeing you around there at final tables that they're like, we got to get a patch on this guy?
No, it was, I guess my relationship with Tana Karn, the president of Run Good, started back in 2014. That's when our Run Good Poker Series actually originated in a small area there in close to Joplin, Missouri, at Quapaw, Oklahoma. Is the name of the town. It's a downstream casino. We started the tour there. And soon after he had his first stop, he picked me up as one of the ambassadors. I guess I'm one of the OGs as far as Run Good goes. And met a lot of great people in that organization and a lot of lifelong friends, you know, even like Gus's godparents, Juliana Cornelius and Darren Dobler. They're my kids' godparents. And very close to them, very close to, I don't want to leave anybody out. So
I know it's hard, right?
yeah, several really close friends from that. And we hang out outside of poker with most of those people. That's our closest friends in the world, to be honest. Tana and his wife and little girl, we've gone places with them because his little girl is the same age as Gus, little Junie. And so we just enjoy family life, and when we say fam, we really feel like they're family in our Run Good organization.
That's awesome, and it really tells. Like, we've done a lot of work with Run Good over the years, and we've really enjoyed tagging along on some of them of their events. And it's always, you know, the people there are top notch. The crew is always fantastic. The staff, and you can tell Tana and Haley really have a fun first attitude about, you know, how to make poker great, I think. So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to play there. And I encourage all listeners, of course, if they're coming out to an event near you, go join them. It's a great opportunity to have a good time.
It definitely is. I would say it's the most rec friendly tour there is. They've been named the GPI small stakes or mid stakes tour of the year, 3 out of the last 4 years. People that come can expect just a big party a lot of times. I mean, we have a good time. We've had a different theme every season. You know, I couldn't name you all the themes. We have 2 seasons a year, and we've been sponsored anywhere from Movado watches to the boot barn to during our Western series to one of the funnest series probably was we were sponsored by Fireball Whiskey, which the funny story to the reason we even got sponsored by them. We were at Downstream for the season beforehand, and we ran the whole casino out of Fireball.
Oh my. So
the next, about 6 weeks later, we were having our next stop. It was kind of a distance between it then. We only used to have 5 or 6 stops per season. Now we have a dozen. But we were going to be at Hard Rock in Tulsa. And whoever was over their account there on Twitter, they made a post about we're coming, you know, next week, and we will not run out of Fireball. So I got this a little bit because our series started on Tuesday, and before the weekend we had run the casino out of Fireball. So when we were all discussing what should be the the theme the next season, some of us just threw it out there. Hey, we might as well be sponsored by Fireball. And Tana always loved to take his shot, and he sent an email to the right person, and sure enough, they sponsored us the next season. It was great.
That's so that was amazing. Great.
A lot of people don't remember much about that season, but that, there's a reason for that.
That doesn't surprise me. Hey, Grolsch, are you listening? Grolsch, is this thing on? Hello, let's do some. Let's make some magic over here. You're walking into a long time unrequited love affair between me and the beer brand Grolsch, who, despite me never reaching out to them, have still never reached out to me and offered a sponsorship. I don't understand. What's the holdup here? We've tried nothing, and we're all out of ideas.
Well, I mean, probably should have bought stock in that business a few years back. So.
Well, that's super fun. So, it doesn't surprise me at all that that's the kind of attitude that that you and the gang have there at those Run Good events. So you mentioned playing on a lot of Run Good Tour events. You talked about playing in the MSPT. You sound like you're sort of a traveling, sort of like fun, friendly grinder a little bit there. Is that like a fair way to describe you?
Oh yeah, that's definite. First of all, I haven't really played much on mid states. I was referring to mid stakes tournaments. Played a couple of series. I like the mid state poker tour. When I've gone to it, I've gone with a good friend of mine, Josh Reichard. He's talked me into coming to a couple places. And by the way, he's one of the best in the country as far as I'm concerned. We're excited to watch him at a WPT final table on the 28th. We're all going to be there with our megaphones and cowbells ready to make some noise.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I would say that I have a good time running across the country. You never know where you're going to see me and some of my friends show up and usually trying to cut up and have a good time. Some people respond really well to that and others don't. And it's disappointing sometimes when people come out to have a good time, but when the fun is starting to be had, they cut it out real quick because they take some things too serious. And I mean, and that's not always the pros that are being that way. I feel like that we'd really try to spread the fun and the love a little more with poker. Rungood's been really good at doing that. You don't see very many people getting too awfully serious and correct each other and anything at our series. But there's times, especially when the drinks are flowing late in the night. Sometimes sure. The true colors come out of people. But we have a good time on the road.
Yeah, I can tell. So what from a logistical point of view, because I think a lot of our audience, they're recreational players, they play in home games or bar leagues, you know, maybe they've got a local card room nearby. The idea of kind of like taking the show out on the road is kind of like romanticized for a lot of recreational players. How much of traveling around and playing poker is just playing poker, and how much of it is sort of like finding cheap hotel rooms and like knowing where to eat for the right price in the right different city and like being able to work out or do whatever you do in a normal routine, but on the road? Talk a little bit about that experience.
But that part is tough for a player to have any kind of longevity on the road. There's a lot of people that have gone broke trying that, you know, that pipe dream. It's I don't want to diffuse it at all, but it is very glorified when people just show the wins and they don't talk about the losses. And anybody that's ever followed me on social media, they know that I wear my heart on my sleeve and I talk about personal issues. We've talked about depression. We've talked about downswings. We've talked about all that because it all goes hand in hand. I mean, poker is really crazy to be your own mountain one day, and within 2-3 weeks, you could feel the lowest of lows and feel like you're never going to win again. And it's that part's tough, but then you add in all the other expenses that go along, like you're talking about with rooms, you know, room and board will eat you up. If you don't have, you know, your diamond card or, you know, for Caesars and have a free room here or there, you don't have 3 or 4 real good friends you can depend on to show up and not bail on you. And that to where you could all get an Airbnb in North Carolina or if you don't have a friend that you trade lumber to, from my personal standpoint, I trade lumber with Jimmy Summerfield a lot, give him a really good deal. And he has like 3 or 4 rooms that their crew down there gets allotted for extra players. Well, I always get that room, you know, so we scratch each other's back. Other than if I didn't have that, it's tough, you know, to go to a place like Durant where the rooms are $300 a night during the week, or, you know, it's impossible. It's impossible to beat that, you know, along with high rake in these lower stakes tournaments, you know, where you're always looking at 18% to 23% rake, and most rec players don't really pay attention to that. I don't pay attention to that as much anymore because I feel like I do beat the rake, but at the same time, I don't, hard for me to say it the way that I want to say it. I don't look at it as much from that standpoint as I do where I want to go to have a good time and have fun with my friends. I mean, I feel like I'm one of the luckier ones, more fortunate ones to be profitable in the low stakes arena. There, I couldn't name you. If I really tried hard, and I know most all of the crushers on the mid stakes, I would say there's only 10 or 15 that truly beat it over time. The ones that travel, you know, when I've done way better when I would be in my centralized location where I would, cause I was 4 hours drive from Tunica, 3 hours from Durant, 3 hours from Tulsa, 4 hours from Kansas City. I could play in that net, you know, in that area, Shreveport's 4 hours. If I stayed in that area and drove and didn't fly, and I found the best room rate and I knew where to eat, or I had friends there that we would just cook at their house, you know, after hours. However, if you can do all that and then hold your own and win a tournament here or there, you know, you can be profitable. But when you start talking about traveling the WSOP circuit with that high rake, and, you know, I'm not trying to dog on them because I play a lot of that, but it's tough for a recreational player to get out there and truly win. You know, if you don't hit a six-figure score once ever, you know, I would say 15 months, it's tough. It's really tough. You know, I've been fortunate to do that a few times, and I would say it's impossible to really beat it over time. I'm not trying to dampen anybody's spirits, but there's so much fun to be had right there in your own area, you know, that you don't have to go out until it's time to take a shot maybe at the series or at the World Series, or maybe, you know, when a circuit comes close to home, take a shot or two, you know, and in the meantime, study, you know.
Yeah, I like that. And no, please dampen the spirits. I think, you know, what we want to do is kind of pull back the curtain on sort of like what life is actually like, because like you say, it's sort of like, you know, Hendon Mob publishes the winnings of players, sure, but not the buy-ins. And so you get a skewed version of how lucrative, you know, professional poker can be. And when it comes to like the narrative, it's again, we see the wins, we see the fun. But right, we don't see the hours in the car or the cost of living, right? Like it there's a price right for that, for sure.
Right. Well, and you, back to, I hate to use, I'll use myself as comparisons, and I won't name any names on the other side. And this is not a brag, so please don't take it as that. But I would say that I have one of, if not the highest ROI in mid stakes. You know, I have, goes along with some of those big six-figure scores that not everyone's going to be lucky enough to get. If you don't mm-hmm. have those every while, it's not going to be that. A $20,000 score is great for most all of us recs that go out and leap just a weekend warrior, and you won $20,000, that's great. But if you was to play 6 days that week, missed work at home, missed your family, and you might have had $12,000 or $14,000 worth of buy-ins that week. So now you won $6,000, you know, your $6,000 profit, and you think you can do it again next time, and you have two or three min caches that seem okay, but you wound up being $8,000 or $9,000 loser for the week. Then you blend those two stops together and you didn't win any money. You mm-hmm. see what I'm saying? So to compare what I've done and what I would say people like Josh Reichert has done, or it's hard to name some. I don't want to name a lot of good names and leave some people out, and I'm sure totally never going to name names of people that I'm going to use as an example here. The example I'd like to use is there's a lot of what I would call regs that go out that have anywhere from $600,000 to $1 million in earnings on that Hendon Mob you're talking about that have stayed in debt to their backer, or have basically left a good job to go broke, because you can easily get, over the course of 5 years, you know, just playing these smaller buy-ins, you can easily get $1 million in buy-ins. Mine has, over the course of 8 years that we've kept up with it, has been, I've won right around $3 million. And I would say that I think my buy-ins were 800,000 or 900,000. So I don't play as much as most people. Most people that do know me, they see my face a lot, but I don't play near as much. Other than the last year, I played a lot. But you see these other guys that are out there all the time grinding. They don't have a job at home that they can fall back on, like I'm fortunate enough to have. They might not have a good wife that supports that, you know.
Sure.
Make money while you're gone. So they depend on that whole bankroll as their life roll. And if they have any kind of vice at all of gambling, or they have a leak in their cash game when they play in the cash game and they lose part of their bankroll that way, it's really, really tough to be ahead in tournament poker these days. And players getting better and better. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I'm rambling or if I'm making any sense to any of you guys. But
oh, I'm loving it, man. You're preaching.
I just hate to think that some of these guys that, like, they're listening to the podcast today that have 1 to 200,000 in earnings, they have a good start and a good grasp on things, that they think, oh, if Lowry can win, I've seen him play, or whoever, if Lowry can win, can do it at that level. And they can. Don't get me wrong. They can 100%. They can win. But the majority of the people that go out and try have failed. And I just think they have to have a backup plan. I think they should balance the amount of cash games they play. They should never play when they drink. On a side note, I'm on the Run Good team, who is known for running people out of Fireball, and I've never even tasted. So at least I've never tasted alcohol in my life.
Wow.
People see me a good time and seeing me, you know, out there, and see who I run with, and they think, man, you're a liar, you know, whatever. That's one thing that I can say that's a leak that I won't ever have to plug, is backing away from, oh, I can't drink from this hour to this hour. You know, I've backed people on the circuit before that had drinking problems, where the big problem that they truly had was they started drinking too early in the night. And by the time it's 10, 11 p.m., from that time till 2 a.m. when we bag is when the most crucial decisions are made. And if they're tipsy, or even farther than that, if they're just falling down drunk, they're not making good decisions for you, mm-hmm. you know? And if that's their own money that they're using, that's a huge leak, Jim. I mean, I see that too often, and I see them go to the pit after they win their min cash. They're disappointed. They won $1,600, which wasn't what they was looking for. They had a big stack. They lost this stack, and they had dreams of winning the 30K there on that one day in Cherokee. So they take that $1,600, which is four buy-ins to the next $400 tournament,
mm-hmm.
and they're broke in 6 minutes at the blackjack table, you know? And I'm like, well, now you're looking for a stake. I mean, that's four more buy-ins, you know? Plug that leak. I've preached that to some of my friends, and don't think for a minute I haven't had that leak at some point in my life too. You know, it's tough to not be in a casino 24/7 and not have that temptation to go play with your friends or try to make something more of it.
Yep. Well, I mean, I love this conversation, and thank you for sharing some of this stuff from behind the curtain for you, like your earnings and what you put into it, and these stories about, you know, the leaks, these life leaks that can get in the way. Because I think that kind of information is like really, really valuable. So I really do appreciate it. It's something that the listeners need to hear. Mm-hmm. And so I'll just remind our listeners, if you've got questions for Dan, type them into the YouTube chat here. We're also going to be looking for some famous poker players' names to play Stake Study Stack a little later on in the show. So that one's always going to be fun. And a reminder that if you're in the YouTube chat and you're one of those fancy special people out there that can leave a super chat, that's a great way to donate to the show and support what we're doing here. And we share a portion of all the donations that we receive through YouTube with a local food bank. So that'll be a way of helping out a local food bank as well. So Dan, I'm so interested in this. Let's talk a little bit about like diversifying between tournaments and cash, like you mentioned there. So, are you strictly a tournament player, or do you also play cash?
Before I ever came on the tournament scene, I played strictly cash. And it's funny that when I leave a tournament that nobody, you know, there's certain places that I go and I'll sit down at a cash game and they're like, well, I didn't know you played cash. You know, this should be fun or whatever. You know, they assume that, you played with a 40 big blind stack late in the tournament or, right. You know, or whatever. And I played some pretty large, you know, cash games when I was starting out, and got, you know, we played really deep and really, I got accustomed to playing against people that didn't care about money and that would play deep, and absolutely you better have some Pepto-Bismol on standby because it was sickening some of the beats that you would take. So I got numb to some of that, and I learned how to play post-flop a lot better than, you know, than most. I feel like I have an edge on a lot of people at the table playing, going post-flop and going to the streets and the blinds or whatever, because I played that for 6-7 years before I ever started playing, you know, truly playing tournaments. And when I go on the road now, when I started playing tournaments, I won a lot of small daily tournaments there in Oklahoma. When I would started playing, we'd play the tournaments that would pay, you know, $1,000 to $1,500 for first. Well, I would take that money immediately and go over and play in the cash game that I normally beat and would just punt it off. And I was like, I didn't understand how all of a sudden did this tournament just change the way I play. And I had to back off and realize over time I realized that I couldn't leave a setting where I was used to being amped up in mentally ready to just get my chips all in and go over. And then all of a sudden buy in for 200 or 300 big blinds in a, you know, small cash game. And you could really get stuck 3 or 4 buy-ins quick and didn't realize that you were just punting money. So I've made it kind of a rule now when I go to a place that I'll either take a day or two off to play cash. If I've bagged in a multi-day and I have a day in between, I'll play cash that day. But if I busted a tournament at 8 p.m. and I still feel fresh, I'll go play. But if I was playing hold'em, I usually try to get in a PLO game. It's just different for me mentally. You know, the mindset's different to sit down and play PLO as it was to play hold'em, you know, in that particular day. I don't know if that helps, but I feel like that's good for me to do. And I love playing cash games and being able to, because I build a stack. Anybody that's played with me before, they know that I build a, you know, I'm on the top of the leaderboard after day one a lot, and I might not win that tournament, but I know how to get a chip lead. And it's, if you can do that in a cash game, it's great because you can just leave, you know, I mean, it's not like, but you can get, you know, you can get 4 or 5 buy-ins in front of you and just kind of sit back and they think you're playing however they think you're playing, and you can play tight for another hour. And if things don't come your way, you can leave. I mean, it's, you know, nobody ever thinks anything of it, you know? So I like both. I like to play both. I truly see that. I was telling somebody the other day, I feel like that I've stayed on course for the last several years with all the different trends in tournament poker and stayed ahead of the game enough to keep winning. But I'm honest with myself, and I know that I don't take time when I'm at home to study and to stay with the trends and stay, you know, study the GTO that all these, I mean, everybody's got a training course, everybody's studying hard, and they're going to pass me up. I know this. I'm, you know, I'm a realist. I know that that's going to happen unless I really want to devote the time that I probably not going to devote to it. So in that sense, I would rather just be able to concentrate in my retirement someday to just play in some small cash game and fall right back on that, you know?
I love it. I love it. Yeah. We talk here a lot about sort of like the changing gears between tournaments and cash play, and sort of like the way you're talking about, like, you know, sitting in PLO instead. So it's just like real clear that you're, you know, supposed to
play then.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay. So when you were giving sort of advice to aspiring traveling pros or grinders, you talked about like playing cash games as well as tournaments. Is that just to fight sort of the variance of tournament plays? Just speak a little bit about why you'd encourage someone to do both.
for one, you're most of the time you're in the you're staying on property. People do have a tendency to get bored, and they're there to play poker. If they don't jump in a cash game every once in a while, they wind up stumbling around through the machines or through, you know, to the pit or whatever. And those temptations are there. And that's such a, we have no edge out there. You know, they're not designed. Those big, nice casinos aren't built because they've given the money away. So at least if you can hone your skills there in the cash game, you can try some things. You try new things all the time in the cash game that you can always re-enter, you know, rebuy right there at the table. These re-entry tournaments these days, you know, you wind up punting your stack trying something new, and you're forced to go to a different table when you buy back in. At least your money's still on that table in the cash game, and you can go back after it maybe. but I think that's one of the things. The main things is I would say they should be trying to have a little balance between cash and tournaments, to where they can just kind of unwind. They can go sit down there. The blinds don't go up. There's no real pressure. They can play. And so it's more of a social setting most of the time in the cash games. Everybody's having a drink or, you know, chilling out a little bit. You can walk away from the table for an hour and go have a dinner, come back to the same stack, you know. So that that's leisure time for me. That's almost like a vacation at a stop to go to play for a little while. Even if I lose money, I mean, I usually left there having a good time. You know, you just have to be smart with it and have a stop loss and you know, and for that matter, be real about how good the game is. Is the game good because you're there? I mean, everybody's like, man, that game's terrible. Don't go over there. And then all of a sudden there's so much money on the table because I showed up. That I'll tell you something. I mean, I'm pure action. Everybody knows that's played with me in a tournament or cash. I like the action and I'm right in the middle of it. So sometimes you got to think, is the game really this good or is it because of me?
Yeah. I love it. I love it. Yeah. Well, you're definitely an action player. And like you say, you know how to build a stack. You were a very fearsome opponent across the table the time that we played. So we still have some time, but I know we're going to run long today. I got a ton of the questions for you. This is so much fun. And we've got some folks commenting in the YouTube chat. Eric Anderson's stealing pole position for the food bank raffle. Gibber, that's Jim Gibson, loves that you're talking about this real world experience. And Janet Fitzgerald says, hi, Daniel. See you in L.A. So what's happening in L.A., Dan?
Well, I haven't told anybody that's asked me about L.A. L.A. is where the Tournament of Champs got moved to from Vegas. So anyone that's won a ring or a bracelet in the last year, I guess, gets to go. And ever since they announced that, I said I wouldn't go. I said it's 98% chance I won't go. I was watching Christina Gollins play last night like a boss on a final table that was being streamed from L.A., the very first tournament there. And it got me itching a little bit to go out there. It looked fun, you know. But the Tournament Champs is out there, and congratulations to Janet again for winning another ring this year and getting to go out there. I wish her all the best. She's a sweetheart. A lot of my friends are getting to go, luckily. But I think that I've qualified for the national championship turned global championship turned Tournament of Champions on the circuit several years, all but one, I believe. And there's been three or four that I didn't go to, you know. It's a personal choice. I know it's a type of rake back, but the WSOP I feel like is turned a blind eye to what's really good. I'm going to be as PC as I can on this.
No, bring it. Yeah. Say it.
I think they've shit on the players, you know, and they, I know from a business standpoint for them, they've put it out there in LA to start a new circuit event. And they know that if they force these people that have qualified to go play in the Tournament Champs there, that it's going to at least double the size of their main event, probably, that's going to be played right before that and a few other tournaments. When it used to be the global championship, national championship, they would give us a $500 travel stipend. They would give us a room for three or four nights, and they would give us a seat And it was only 100 of us that got to play it, which meant that $1 million free roll was a $10,000 seat. That's good rake back. Nowadays, they don't give you a stipend. You have to pay $200 a night for a room. You travel most of us from the East Coast has to travel all the way across. When this tournament was originally advertised to be at the World Series of Poker in the middle of the series, that way everybody could be there. Everybody would already be at the series. Everybody was excited about that. There again, I'm not trying to dampen anybody's hopes and dreams of going out and winning that bracelet. I'm hoping one of my friends win it. And anybody that hasn't ever gotten to play in it before, 100% I've encouraged them to go. I've not tried to discourage anyone from going. I'm just giving you my opinion on it. I think that they need to do something a little bit different for their players, because there's a lot of us that have traveled the country all over the place to give them really high rate and support their brand for years. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
Well, no, I appreciate your candor. And I think it's a conversation that a lot of people are having. So it's well worth bringing people's attention to it. So let's go back to, we were talking about being a profitable player on the traveling circuit and how, you're in pretty elite company that way. And I agree. What are you and the other people that are profitable traveling players like that? What are you doing differently that some of the other players aren't doing? And is it all at the table, or is some of it off the table, managing expenses and that kind of stuff?
It's hard to say, as far as I know that I've been beating a lot of players that are better than me over the last couple of years. I'm not going to candy coat that to myself and say that and beat my own chest. I think that there's way more players that I'm playing against in a 300 or 400 up the player field. There's bound to be 50 or 60 of them that are better poker players than I am. I have more experience, especially when it comes down to the final three tables. If I can get myself there, a lot of times I'm a closer. And the only place the money is really worth it is in the top three or four spots. So I take chances. I don't really, especially on the circuit where the difference between ninth and first in a lot of these places is just you either win 1800 for ninth or 18,000 for first. That's good money for any of us, but anything in between that isn't really, it's hard for me to try to say. I just go for it. I'll just cut out all the other chatter. I go for it a lot more than a lot of these people do. I know how to put pressure on people. I know when to change gears and pull the reins back. I think people like Josh Reichert are more of a GTO style. They study. He's very well studied in all GTO, but he also knows how to go for it. You know, he's not afraid to go for it early. I think that's where he and I and somebody like, Preston McEwen, Matt Higgins, Maurice Hawkins, even, you know, if we're naming some people that are successful on this mid-stakes circuit right now, you'll see them go for it early and try to build two or three starting stacks early on. Once you have that, you have so much more playability, because people get lost in the fact that they started off with 150 or 200 big blinds, because after about three or four levels, you only have 25 or 30 big blinds starting with that same stack. So if you're just treading water for them early levels, you're putting yourself in a really bad spot after a couple hours. And if you can stay ahead of the curve and have 100 to 120 big blinds after 4 hours of play, you really are putting yourself in a, even though it's 20 hours before you probably win a main event or whatever, you have way more playability. And if you look at those players I mentioned, they're willing to do that. And just because they fired three or maybe four shells in that same tournament, I hear people all the time say, well, I could win too if I fired three or four shells well, then do it. Then go after it. You know, that's okay. I mean, it's okay when when they made it where it's a unlimited re-entry tournament, it hurts the recreational player. I've told these players that a lot. I'm like, you know, for one, it's hard to beat Josh Reichard in a tournament. It's sure as hell hard when you're having to beat him four times, you know. And I mean, I guess I have to say that about myself or Preston or whoever the same way. Sometimes it's just better to just know how many shells you're willing to fire as a recreational player. And if you would rather fire that day or wait until the next day and fire some more at a different tournament at an earlier level. I know when I get chips, you know, late in the tournament, last three tables, if I've still got 50 or 60 big blinds when the average is 30 or 40, I'm usually hard to handle because I'm constantly in their face making them know at least after the turn, they're going to be playing for their whole stack at some point. If they're going to call this raise, they've got to make a decision right then. And a lot of times you just take those, they just cow down to you or they realize they've got to put it all in right now and make you make the decision. Well, a lot of those times I just have it, you know, and then they're just broke, you know, they just get busted. I don't know if that kind of answers your question as far as what we're doing different, but I think the people that go for it, build a stack early and keep the throttle down and but also know how to change gears and not be too proud when the other alpha male comes to the table and tries to run their table. As long as you can plug that leak and not try to run every table you're on, you know, then you should be fine, you know.
I love it. So I'm going to come back to this idea of reentry in tournaments because that's something that we've been talking about a lot here. But talk to me a little bit about sort of like being a closer and applying that pressure, because I think that you do that really well. And it does kind of epitomize what separates good poker players from dabblers who just want to make hands and get paid, right? So
right.
So what are you looking for? So let's say we're there. We're in the last three tables. You've got, you know, one and a half or twice the average stack. What kind of positions are you trying to get into? What spots are you trying to find that you can then take advantage of?
There's a couple. I mean, you've got to be aware of everyone's stack size because, especially when I've gotten to that point. I've gotten to that point in the tournament by being aggressive. So a lot of these people on that table that I'm at the time have seen it. So if they're be quiet, okay, buddy. Got the little ones coming in. So I try to be aware of those 10 to 15 big blind stacks that we know are a shoving stack because there are times where we have just the right hand that we probably should go ahead and call it off. And then you do that twice and you're in the same boat with everyone else. So you got to be aware of that behind you, play your position well. And a lot of times everybody says, well, you don't want to clash with the other big stack at the table. I love playing deep stack. I love playing multi-street poker. So I don't mind going against, even if I don't mind doing that against certain players. I mean, I'm not going to try to pick on, Preston. I'm not going to try to pick out Preston McEwen, who will also put me in a weird spot just because we have big stacks. I mean, I can pick a different spot, but I try to be aware of that. I try to be aware of the fact that most of these tournament series, you redraw at 27 players and then again at 18 and then again at the final table. So if you get the wrong position with that aggressor or that other big stack, you can bide your time just for another few players and you have built that stack big enough to where you can blind out three or four orbits and not hurt you at all. And now all of a sudden you got a whole new table draw and you can go back to work. Sometimes it works. Sometimes that's good. And sometimes it's not, but over the course of time, if you're aware of that, I think it's good. And there you go again. I love to put that added pressure on people when we're at two tables that, they love to tell their family that they made the final table, you know?
Yes.
I love to tell my buddies, yeah, I made another final table this week, but I don't want to go out eighth or ninth because I blinded down on that two tables left from 25 bigs down to 16. And then all of a sudden the blinds went up and now I have 8 bigs, you know, just because the blinds went up on me again. All in the course of 45 minutes, you went from average to short stack, you know. So I noticed people get themselves in those spots a lot and then they get their aces cracked, you know, eighth place, you know, they get their aces cracked eighth place to a guy that had queen jack suited that he raised and had to call off that 8 bigs. Well, I mean, yeah, you had him in a really tight spot, but you put yourself there in the first place, you know, by having that short of a stack. And we see that often. And I try to exploit those players as much as I can and pick on their blinds if I can, or come over the top of, or just play in position on them. You know, when they're ready to shut down because they're scared. They're scared of, they're playing not to lose. Let me put it that way. I coached basketball for several years and have been around sports a lot. And you see a lot of really good teams get a lead late in the game. And instead of holding that lead or pressing it harder, you know, they stop doing what they've been doing to get themselves there because they're playing not to lose. And then all of a sudden they put themselves in a weird spot. They go to overtime and they lose, you know, because they play, instead of playing to win, they played not to lose. So I try to never play anything other than to win the tournament. And if I fall short and get third or fourth place, the money's still good. Okay.
I love that. And I think that's crucial. And I think another thing that, like, less experienced players, we value these false bubbles, like getting a bag at the end of day one or making a final table where it's not really a, like an ICM bubble. It's not really a value bubble, but you can apply some pressure on us. Because we want to make that final table. We want to, you know, go through that experience of bagging up after day one. And so that's a really, I really appreciate that. That's great. Let's talk about some other kind of common mistakes that you see less experienced players making. So I think especially in series like Run Good, where you get a lot of players out there who are looking to have fun. Maybe they're dipping a toe into a tournament series and they play like their local dailies or something like that. So I guess I got two questions for you. One, how do you spot some of these less experienced players? And then two, how do you, like, you know, not to put it, not take advantage of them because they're not as experienced as more experienced players?
Well, for one, you notice several things with a novice player, or ones that have just been playing home games, I guess, or playing online. You know, the new players that are playing online. I'm not talking about these online crushers. I'm talking about people that have gotten their feet wet from the comfort of their own home, and now they're going to try it in the casino. You'll see them never look at anything but the board. You know, they never look up at you. They never try to look around and see what actions other people are making. They never look left like all of us should be doing. They strictly look at the flop when it comes out. Well, we get to see and convey so much knowledge from what they're doing. You know, we get to look at them and see where their eyes went, where their hands go, how they're breathing, all of these things before I ever even make an action toward them, you know. And they don't realize, and the more that they try to mask it, the worse it gets. And that just comes with experience. So when you see that happening, you know they're brand new. I guess maybe that answers your question on that. Things I would say for the rec players to try to do better is try to pay attention to everything else until the action is truly on them. You know, that flop that comes out is still going to be the same flop. If you're in position, that's the best thing about being in position. The other guy has to act first. He has to look at the board, unless he's going to check dark, like is also one of a novice's true signs of being a novice is I check dark, or, you know, or whatever, or they never look. I stare at people a lot of times and they don't want to look away and see the flop. So they go ahead and check before that, because they know that I'm waiting to see what they're going to do. I would say that would be a tip for a lot of rec players is to do that, to not look at the flop until it's on them. You know, pay attention to the person they're in, or if they're in their heads up, it's easy. If they're in there with four people, pay attention to the most aggressive player, or pay attention to the pre-flop aggressor, you know, and try to go from there. I mean, you're not going to have all the information, but you can pick up some, and you can, and that also keeps the other player from picking it up off of you.
Yep, so. Yeah, that's a great point. What's one thing that you just love about the game of poker?
Come in here for you. Someone gave me a hug, but he's trying to stay out of the
That's seat. Nice. So,
I just love the camaraderie the most, I think. I would say second most. I like the competition most.
Yeah.
I like who wins. That's why I've always – there's been a few times in my life that after I didn't have anything to prove, I guess you could say, that I've chopped a few tournaments, you know, because it was with friends or the money made the most sense or whatever. But most of the time I don't like to chop because I like to see who wins. I want to see who won that day, you know. And I like to hang out with the guys after the tournament. I like to go to dinner break with these guys and not say one word about poker, you know. Mm-hmm. I like to talk about our families and catch up on old times and talk about whatever, and then, you know, enjoy the spoils of winning a tournament. You know, whoever won the tournament last is paying, you know, okay, for dinner. I mean, that's, and I never mind paying for dinner because it's my friends, you know. Yeah. I love it. I love being able to go, and I've had more fun and probably got more out of tournaments lately by railing other friends and pulling for them and being so excited for them. I mean, for the people that say, you know, when somebody says, oh, so-and-so won another tournament, and I'm like, I'm excited. I'm immediately, if I have them in my phone, I'm texting them or I'm messaging them on Messenger or something, because I just heard, when I heard about it, some of these people are like really bent and bothered about it. I'm excited when my friends win, you know. I mean, don't be jealous. I hope they're not jealous when I win. It's something we all share. I mean, we strive to win these tournaments, and they don't come very often. You know, I've told somebody the other day, you're only as good as your last win. And some of these guys go, you know, 15 months without an actual win. It's tough. I mean, we're celebrating if they win a nightly for $3,000. It don't matter. It's hard to win any tournament. So,
yeah,
I think I would put those two things at the top, is the competition and the camaraderie.
Awesome. We're going to wrap up the interview portion of the show shortly. We've got a couple of fun segments to throw at you. Before we do, what's one part of the traveling grinder lifestyle that it actually feels like a bit of a drag that you don't look forward to and that you wish you didn't have to go through or deal with?
Easy answer is being away from my family.
Yeah.
If a lot of times they get to go with me, when I say my family spread out all over the country. I have three older kids. Two of them live in Fayetteville, Arkansas. One of them lives in Springfield, Missouri. And so the one that's still at home, he gets to go with us. He misses way too much school as it is, but he's very sharp and his teachers really love him. So it's, they let him slide a lot. Okay. Say hi here.
Come
here.
Hey there.
Hi. All right. So he gets to go with us quite a bit. He'll be in Vegas with us quite a bit this summer. He went with me to St. Martin for 2 weeks. 1 week he was out for spring break, and the next week he was skipping school. Right. So, but when I'm away from them and Krista's at home running things at our business, it's tough. I mean, that's the toughest thing there is missing, you know, good night giggles as he's going to sleep, or, you know, snuggling on the couch with him and her, you know, my wife, or, you know, just going out and enjoying the things that you won't get to enjoy in a few years. You know, I mean, I miss a lot of the stuff with my older kids, and it's tough. It's tough to look back at that and say you're never getting it back, you know?
So, yep, for sure.
That's probably it.
I can feel it. I can feel it.
Yep. Yep.
All right. Well, Dan, this has been a really fun interview. I'm going to play our transition music here. So we're going to jump into our two favorite segments here, Stake, Study, Stack, and then we'll close the action with our speed round. So I'll hand it over to Chris Jones to set you up for a Stake, Study, Stack.
Okay.
All right, Dan. So this is a game we call Stake, Study, Stack. I'm gonna give you three names. You're gonna choose one player who you'd like to stake in a tournament or cash game, one player who you'd like to study with, and one player who you would just like to take all of their chips and stack them at the table.
All right.
And I don't think we quite mentioned this, so I want to frame this part of this by saying you have 15 World Series of Poker circuit rings. Like, oh my goodness, that's a lot.
Thank you.
So first of all, congratulations. And I like to stir the pot, so I'm going to ask you about three people who are kind of right up there neck and neck with you. So great. The three names I have for you are Ari Engel, who's the only person who has more rings than you, yeah. Josh Reichert, who you've mentioned a bunch, and then Maurice Hawkins, who all, both of them have 15 along with you.
I think this was easy. I mean, a lot of people, I've seen y'all show a couple times, and they're all, oh, I'm not sure. This is easy. So I would definitely, Ari's proven it at every level. I would stake Ari for sure. Love the kid. I was just in Grayton, California with him. He won our Run Good Cup out there for mixed games this past week. And Maurice Hawkins, I'll let the cat out of the bag. A lot of people might not, you guys might not have known. He just went ahead of me in the ring list today, about an hour ago, just before the start. He beat another friend of mine, Matt Higgins, for the main event in Cherokee for, I don't know, over $250,000, I'm sure. So kudos to both of those guys. I would definitely like to stack Maurice. And then, of course, I love Josh and his awesome poker mind, and I would love to study with Josh.
Fantastic. I love that segment so much. I just wish Eric Jin could join us for it, because it's his baby, and he can't join us, unfortunately, this time zone. All right. So this has been great. Dan, so we're going to run into our speed round here. So this we call it closing the action. I'm going to just throw a bunch of questions at you. And if it's taking too long, now you can say pass. If you don't have a quick answer available, you can say pass. But if it's taking too long, we're going to throw the buzzer at you and just move on. So speed is of the essence. We're going to start mostly poker questions. We're going to start off with a really easy one. Are you ready?
Yep.
All right. What is your favorite poker hand?
10-8 of spades.
Is poker a gamble or a skill game?
Skill game.
What's your biggest poker pet peeve?
I would say just negative people at the table.
Good answer. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
Absolutely. And Lexi Gavin should be shot for not watching that movie.
Is Ace King a drawing hand?
I think it's a powerful hand. I don't believe it's a drawing hand necessarily.
Is an open face sandwich a sandwich?
No. If you have to eat it with a fork and a knife, no.
So we're asking the real questions here. What's one thing that you are truly afraid of?
Snake.
Should vacations be lazy or busy?
They should truly be lazy, but mine are almost always busy.
Is a royal flush a straight flush?
Yes, it is.
Who's one player that you respect?
Chris Conrad.
There's a yellow light coming up. Speed up or slow down?
Always speeding up.
What is your favorite, when you were a kid and you would have like a special holiday, what was your favorite like childhood family holiday meal?
What was the holiday meal?
Yeah, what was the main course you most look forward to?
We live in the South, so it was beans and cornbread with some fried potatoes. And I mean, we might have that on Christmas Day. It didn't matter.
Nice. What's one thing you can't live without?
My wife.
Aw. Who is your poker nemesis?
You have to pass on that one.
You can pass on it. All right. And then the last question, Dan. You've had such a rich, full life on the felt and off the felt, but if someone came up to you with a loaded gun, held it to your head and said, Dan Lowry, you have to go back and make one change. You have to do one thing differently in your life. What's one thing you would choose to go back and do differently?
Spend more time with my friends and family.
Yeah. Great answer. All right, I'm going to do some quick math here. Looks like 1,114 points. That's a fantastic result, Dan. That's a really, really good result. I'm not surprised. The guy just crushes. He just crushes whatever the competition is.
1,114. When you had Lexi on, it was like 1650, and I thought, man, that I know that was maybe an SAT score. I don't even know.
Yeah, that I think Rob was hosting that night, so you'll have to take it up with him about his own personal scoring system. You know, we all handle it our own way here. But I think 1116, 1114, whatever scientifically arrived at number that we gave you there, you should be very proud of that. That feels like an equal score. Dan, if folks, we'll put your Twitter handle in the show notes. But if folks want to like say thanks for coming on the show, or if they want to reach out to you, is Twitter the right place to do that? And like, what can they do to say thanks or to do something nice? I won't say buy you a beer, but what's a nice thing that people can do for you?
Just come by and say hi. I mean, I'm about as much of an approachable person on the, you know, on the scene as anyone. I try to take time. I mean, a lot of times we're in a hurry when we're at a poker stop or whatever. But if I can, I'll at least take a few minutes and try to meet people. Don't think I'll ever remember anyone's name, because I can't remember my own half the time. I meet a lot of people. So if I call your brother or sis or Bubba or hey, dude, I mean, just take it as I at least know that I see your face and I know you.
So. Yeah, I love it. All right,
they can reach me on Twitter. They can DM me on there, on maybe on Facebook Messenger or something. Ask any of my friends. They can give you my number if you really need to talk. I'm always available.
All right. And I guess there's a good chance we'll find you at a Run Good or a WSOP circuit stop coming up one time soon, too.
I hope so. I hope we all get together and have a good laugh. And I wanted to just take time to thank you guys for having me on the show. I was pretty nervous about, didn't know any, I don't ever get on these podcasts or anything, so I hope I didn't really screw everything up. But I know I took the mic more than you guys probably are used to. I talked way more than I probably should. And I hope I didn't talk about anybody in a negative way, because man, there is so many positive, great people in this game. And anybody that I've mentioned, I probably mentioned because I have nothing but love and respect for them.
No, I got to say, Dan, I thought you did a great job of being honest and also like courteous, and you didn't portray anybody poorly. And I thought you handled yourself very well. And it was a very insightful interview as well. Really well done.
What you get is what you see with me. I try to stay real and real to myself and to whoever. And if you don't like honesty, don't ask me a question usually.
Yep, I appreciate it. Well, I hope we get to have you on again sometime in the not too distant future and find out even more about this fantastic character that named Dan Lowry.
Well, buddy, if I win a bracelet this summer, you better have me right back on.
Yes, sir. Book it. Book it, pal.
All right. All right. Thanks, all of you.
Thanks again, Dan. We'll talk to you soon, I hope. John Somsky, let's talk about some recent home game results, and then we're going to give away a prize to help support a local food bank.
All right. Well, on May 8th, we had our Mixed Game Championship Series. That's a series where we keep track of the points, and whoever is the points earner at the end of the year gets the Player of the Year title. And on May 8th, a really mad guy got his first mixed victory for the year.
He's been on a tear this year, I gotta say. And John, sorry, let me officially interrupt you. Just to remind our YouTube chatters, this is the time, folks. Type the words food bank into the YouTube chat, and we're going to do a raffle just at the end of the show here to give away a fantastic prize to someone who's participating in the show tonight for free over YouTube. So all you have to do is type in the words food bank, be like Eric Anderson, who got in there with the very savvy number one pole position. And I'll just mention the reason that we do this is because we all want to make the world a better place. And in a very divisive time, everybody needs a little help more than they used to, more than they usually do. And a great way that you can make the world a better place is just by helping a hungry person in your area put some food on the table. You might be surprised who needs a little help putting food on the table for a family or a loved one. And the best way that you can contribute towards making their life better is by donating a few dollars out of your wallet, a few non-perishable food items from your pantry, or some hours from your week volunteering your time. So if you just pull out your smartphone and Google food bank near me, you'll find an organization that could use your help to make a real difference in your own community and neighborhood. So just for tonight, just type the words food bank into the YouTube chat and we'll give away a great prize at the end of the show. Sorry, John, thank you. And please continue your fantastic update of some recent free Rec Poker Home Game Club wins.
A big deal. 1992, Brian DeHaven got his second nightly victory for the year. A really mad guy, got his fifth nightly victory for the year. Don't Chase 666, Joseph Armstrong got his first international victory for the year. Stewie 13, Stuart Carriage got his second international victory for the year. And then Swedish Fishy 77, Lars, got his second LPP event. So, Lars, contact info at rec.poker for your free month at Learn Pro Poker.
Do it, Lars, just like the podcast where you can join for free and win a real prize just for showing up. The Home Game Club, you can play in our free Play Money home games for nothing. But if you win the Sunday home game, then you win a whole month at Learn Pro Poker, one of our fantastic learning partners. So it's our pleasure to be working with Ryan LaPlante and that great team at Learn Pro Poker and helping to introduce their fantastic training material to more recreational poker players around the world. So yeah, send that email, Lars, to info@rec.poker, and we'll get you all set up. All right, Chris, we have the DisoCam set up. I am looking. I see Eric Gibber and our new audience member here, Daniel Hughes. Welcome, Daniel. Those are the three that I see. Are those?
Yeah. Anyone last entries? I see we got Janet, a number of people in here. Come on, jump in here.
I see there's some other people.
I'm giving you 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I don't see it. All right. So that's okay. These are our three. We got a four-sided die.
I'm going to roll the four-sider.
All right. If we get a four, it's a re-roll. And, I'll donate, if we roll a four, I'll donate $20 to a food bank.
All right, so we're trying to bankrupt Jim, rolling fours.
Some fours.
Here we go.
Not going to be a one.
It's a three.
All right, that's Daniel Hughes.
Congratulations.
Yeah. So thanks for joining the podcast. And one of the great things about joining the podcast for free is you can win a great prize. So the way we do this is, if you are not already a Rec Poker Premium member, congratulations. You've just won a free month of Rec Poker Premium. Send an email to info@rec.poker, and we'll get you all set up with what you need to start your free month. You're going to love it. I know most of the premium members, and I don't think you are one already, so that will be your prize. But if you're listening along and you're thinking, boy, that's fun, but what if I'm already a premium member? If a premium member wins the draw, they get a free month at one of our fantastic learning partners like Learn Pro Poker, Solve for Why, the Poker Forge, Red Chip, PokerCoaching.com, Jacket Coaching. I think I actually hit all six of them that time. We've got a seventh one coming in June. I'm not going to spill the tea, but there's only so many excellent training sites out there. And we got another one to come join up with Rec Poker. I love this collaborative spirit that is at the heart of everything that we do here. We love working with other training sites, coaches, recreational players. We just want to be that place in the middle where everybody comes to come have fun and learn together. So stay tuned. Some exciting news coming in June about a new learning partner. And let me see if you want to support the show. Go to rec.poker/support. You can find a bunch of ways to help us out without even spending a dime, although there are also some ways to buy us a cup of coffee or something like that. So go check that out. John and Chris, is there anything that we should be mentioning? I guess the third Saturday in June will be our next Heads Up Bracket, which is one of our quarterly home game tournaments. This one's just a heads up ladder bracket, the winner of whom gets their way into Marek Madness next March. So circle that one. And we are going to be doing a meetup game in Las Vegas for WSOP on June 22nd at the Poker Oasis. That's a Saturday afternoon game. And it's the swan song for the Poker Oasis as Tony and Joseph are pulling up stakes and moving down to sunny Mexico. I think that's public information, so I can totally dox them on the podcast by saying it out loud. So congratulations to them, and thanks for all the fun that they've provided to the Las Vegas crowd at the Poker Oasis hosting their home games there for the last while. You will be missed, but it was fun, and I'm looking forward to sending you and the Poker Oasis off in style on June 22nd. So if folks are interested in that, send that email to info@rec.poker, and maybe you can come join us for the meetup game. All right.
I feel like I need to take, since Rob is not here tonight, I need to stand in for him and just mention your weird Canadianisms. I mean, typically when you are going to divulge a secret, it's known as spilling the beans. You might also cry over spilt milk, but I've never heard any type of saying that was, I'm not going to spill the tea.
Mm.
Is this something, is this actually a saying, or are you just making it up as you go along?
YouTube chat, come on, punish this man. Spilling the tea is absolutely a thing. And John, it's very popular with the youth of today, I'll have you know. But mostly it means to like spread some gossip or something as opposed to...
I think this might be more of a, not a Canadianism, but more of a generational thing. Is my not to disparage anybody's sort of age on the podcast.
Okay, so this is the second time today I've been called old. So maybe
I'm just young. He's saying that I'm young and youthful and like very plugged in to the scene. I think I'm on fleek would be another way of putting it.
Oh boy, we got to get out of here before we get ourselves into trouble.
Rob, I'm never doing your job again.
All right, well, a big thank you to Dan Lowry for being a fantastic guest. And of course, to the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino. Head to runaces.com to find out more information about them. Thanks to Chris Jones and John Somsky for joining me here in the booth. Some fantastic new folks in the YouTube chat. Thanks for joining us there and having fun. And you, the listeners at home, we couldn't do it without you. So we'll see you next week on the Rec Poker Podcast. Good night.